Today, on the Basketball Manitoba podcast, we have Seabears head coach Mike Taylor. He was born in Williamsport, Pennsylvania, and played his college ball at Indiana University of Pennsylvania. He's coached in the United States, Germany, Czech Republic, England, Poland, and most recently here in Winnipeg with our Seabears. Coach, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Darcy. It's great to talk a little Seabears basketball here in the holiday season.
Absolutely. So we're going to obviously talk about the Seabears, but we're actually going to start with your story. And but before we get into the origin story of kind of how you got into basketball, obviously, you know, there was a contract signing and you're going to be sticking around a little longer in Winnipeg. Tell us about that.
Yeah, you know, last year was really something special. You know, we put a lot of things and a lot of hard work into, you know, forming the organization and creating it. David Asper's vision, Jason Smith and all the management and everybody. And the way it came together, I don't think anybody could really have predicted. It came together in a short time. And as much as you plan and as much as you hope, you know, the reception from the city was something special. I've had people tell me they've never seen a basketball team, minor league team, you know, received and welcomed like what happened in Winnipeg. Record-setting crowds, you know, they just, you could tell there was a hunger, a desire for basketball in the city. And there's lots of fans. And I think, you know, we tried really hard to connect with the city and connect with a lot of different people. So from that side, I think from, you know, our hard work put us in a good place, but we're so thankful and appreciative for the reception from Winnipeg and what happened. And, you know, I think as a coach, you try to find places where you fit. You know, I feel like I have a good fit with the organization, with the people. I feel like the city itself, you know, is a blue collar city. It's a great sports town. And for me, you know, I appreciate and value those things. And I'm really thankful for, you know, what we were able to accomplish in year one. But, you know, we set the bar pretty high. And you know, now it's not, you know, relaxing and feeling good about ourselves. It's like, hey, let's be a team, you know, that can sustain success, that can establish itself and really grow and do something special. So I'm really proud of what we were able to do and really, you know, thankful for the opportunity to continue to build. I love to build organizations, build programs. And, you know, I'm really thankful for the opportunity to build the Seabears over the next 2 years in Winnipeg.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's interesting. You know, you said you can't predict kind of, you know, what would come. And before I, you know, we press record, I said, you know, I had a good feeling just, you know, being so integrated in the basketball community here for so long that there would be a, you know, a strong level of support. Now I didn't suspect what we saw, cause I've been following the CBL for a long time and I know about some of the other markets and, you know, you see some strong markets, but this is like another level of strong, the support, and the attendance, and just the whole experiences. It was elite when it came to franchises in the CBL.
Well, I think a lot of things came together, you know, like the basketball side, we put together a competitive team, a good team that people enjoyed watching. You know, I think on the management side, people will give the coach or the players a lot of credit, but yeah. I think we have to look at David Asper's vision, trying to build something in the city that connected people from all different sides, all different, you know, parts of town. And I think that, you know, Jason and the management, I think what they did was fantastic in terms of the, you know, fan experience. Mm-hmm. You know, you go into Canada Life Center and you see a really professional venue. You have just great entertainment at the game. And when you package that with a good basketball team, which is the heart of it all, then I think things are great. But, you know, coaches, players get a lot of attention, get a lot of credit, but we got to give a lot of credit to David and to Jason and a lot of people behind the scenes as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I know, you know, we're going to go on a little Seabears run here. I get to interview David and then Simon as well. So, you know, just leaning into the Seabears, but you're absolutely right. You know, being someone who's, you know, been behind the scenes, it's the vision that starts the whole thing, right? It's the person that's taking that first step and has that vision. And I know in the early years when there was rumors of this happening and everything like that, that was the most important thing. There was a lot of time spent on that, you know, what it's going to look like, how it's going to feel, who's going to be involved. And did a really good job of reaching out to the local people and community. Like, hey, like I got a call asking my opinion, right? And I've been around, but like, I don't know anything about running a pro team, but still. And there was a whole group of people that were, you know, were queried and asked about what they thought, what the venue should be, who else we should talk to. And so, you know, Winnipeg is a small community, but it's a very tight-knit basketball community. And I think absolutely what the Sea Bears are kind of like, you know, if we get into like a larger a conversation here about the CBL and leagues in Canada in the past, the CBL's done a wonderful job of doing exactly what the Sea Bears have done here in Winnipeg, connecting with Canada basketball, you know, growing slowly and doing the things the right way. And I think the Sea Bears being, you know, one of the newest franchises are kind of an expression of that, doing things the right way, connecting with the community and truly developing a Canadian product that's unique and is an expression of what needs to be done within said communities or within the country to actually make it possible. Right. And so, absolutely right. Kudos for the management team and the vision of David Asper and just everything coming together. And, you know, again, like I said, I think I said this off the air, but there's been an increase in the amount of people playing basketball in Manitoba since the Sea Bears. So just that alone, I mean, just from a basketball perspective and, you know, we're going to get into your story. I know it's obviously shaped your life. It's shaped my life. I know it's a very powerful sport. And so if you can have that effect on kids, it's just phenomenal. So very excited.
You know, Darcy, that's one of the things that I'm really thankful for and so happy about is you make a positive impact in a city, in a province where kids, boys, girls, different ages, adults are starting to play. They're starting mm-hmm. to pick up a basketball and join a team and get in a league and have these experiences with the game that we love. And I've been fortunate enough to coach in several different countries around the world. And there's nothing better when you can leave a lasting impact of people enjoying the game. And, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm really thankful to be a part of what the Sea Bears are doing and the impact we're having. And it makes me so happy to see, you know, all types of kids have opportunities to get in the gym and play and really just fall in love with basketball. So that's really something special that's come along here in the last few months.
Absolutely. So we hope to see more of that. You obviously mentioned we're talking about kids here. So it's a great time just to transition into your story and find out kind of how you got into the game. And so I like to ask this question directly, you know, tell me your earliest basketball memory. Like what was it? You know, who was there?
Well, so my dad was a coach. You know, that's where it all starts. My dad was an assistant for Bob Knight at West Point at Army and, you know, the Coach K team. And he was on great staffs there. Don DeVoe, Al Abalbo, Dave Bliss, just, you know, great, great coaches. And my dad will tell you that Bob Knight completely opened his understanding to basketball to a new level. He went on to get a doctorate at Springfield College. And basically then took over Lock Haven State in Pennsylvania. That's where I was born, in Williamsport. He, in the process of being at West Point in different places, he got to be close with Willis Reed. Willis Reed hired him to be an assistant with the Knicks. So we moved to Long Island.
On the way.
And then from when they got fired, it was a short run, but when they got fired, they were out for a year or so, but Willis took him to Omaha, Nebraska and Creighton University. So we moved around quite a bit, but it was always around basketball. Mm. We were in Creighton for a year. And then we moved back to Pennsylvania, which kind of where I went to high school, Clarion. My dad took over Clarion University. At the time it was Clarion State College. So my earliest memories are of being around my dad's teams, going to his practices, going to his games. As I got older, I was a ball boy sitting on the end of the bench eating popcorn. You know, friends that weren't in the game, I'd be sharing with them.
Yeah.
Taking road trips with the team, going to his basketball camps, going on scouting trips with him. And, you know, like I would just really look up to my dad. He was a great role model and a great example. And we would have many, many discussions about sports and coaching. You know, he coached us in baseball, and you know, I also played
Yeah.
school football. So very, very sport oriented family. But that bond between father and son in terms of coaching was something I've always valued and always appreciated with my dad. He always challenged me early to, you know, develop your own philosophy. How do you think a practice should run? How do you think a team should defend? What type of offense should they run? You know, so I was watching him scout games on TV, and I would go get my pen and pad and just as a, you know, young kid, just be sitting there and drawing up my own stuff. And it's funny, they came down to visit last week and he was all happy because he found this fifth grade homework assignment, you know, and, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, basketball coach, and I'd you know, be like my dad and things like this. So those are the earliest memories that I have. I've been fortunate enough to be around a lot of great coaches and a lot of great players. And that's kind of the motivation for me to get into coaching was I want to be a basketball coach like my dad. I absolutely love sports. You know, I'm big baseball, football, basketball, even hockey fan. But basketball was kind of always that I felt like I had a special advantage because of all those conversations and all those experiences with my dad, going to the gym to work out, watching games together. So I always felt like, man, this is an advantage that I have that I've been blessed with that I need to put into use. You know, because the conversations were more than just, let's say, X's and O's. It was, you know, how do you handle situations? How do you manage players? And, you know, when I was playing at IUP, he went back to North Carolina, Greensboro to get it, you know, for his sabbatical. He basically studied sports psychology. You know, and in the 90s, when you started talking sports psychology with people, people would be like, what is that? I don't want to hear that.
Yeah.
So, you know, before that became, let's say, a real mainstream thing, you know, we were having these discussions about, you know, the right mindset, the right preparation, the keywords, and, you know, let's say empowering players and things like this, you know, the how you communicate and things. So I felt like all of these things combined, it's like, man, you know, I really can't wait to coach. And, yeah, that was always my goal. It was never a goal to be coaching outside of the USA. I just wanted to be a college coach like my dad. And then the way things developed, the way things opened, you know, it just kind of opened up like that.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. So it was from day one, that coaching moment. So I asked you your earliest memories, and it almost instantly, I don't even say almost, it, you didn't mention playing but one time in that whole thing. And so you obviously did go on to play in high school and you went on to play in college. So on that note, how early was it that you, I mean, you said you knew you wanted to coach, but when did you start coaching? Were you coaching while you were in high school already? Tell me about when you were actually playing. Were you just the naturally, hey, I'm the captain, I'm the coach on the floor, right from this jump?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I looked at myself and said, hey, you know, like I'm not 6'8", not super athletic. So what is my best sports chance possibility to, you know, do something? And I was like, hey, I look like a baseball player. So I really, my dad, my dad played three sports at Syracuse. You know, he went there on a football scholarship and then ended up playing basketball and baseball. He was an MVP at a 1964 team that went to the World Series when they used to have a team.
Okay.
So baseball was also a big thing for us. We played a lot of baseball. And I actually, my first year of college, I went to Florida Southern and played college baseball. And basically at that point, I'm like, hey, I'm committing to be a baseball player. I'm going to work. I'm going to develop. I'm going to go for it. I realized, you know, through the process there, man, I got a lot of work ahead of me. And I thought to myself, you know what? I either put a lot of work into my baseball or my ultimate dream is to be a basketball coach. And, you know, I want to make sure that I have the understanding and feel as a player. So I went to the coaches at Florida Southern and they were like, no, you're a baseball player. So then I knew like, okay, I need to change. That's when I transferred back up to IUP and Kirk Kanaski was there. And basically he's like, hey, yeah, you know, you can walk on our team. You know, you can join our team. And basically from that standpoint, that's where the change happened. You know, Florida Southern was number one in the nation, Division II in baseball at the time. So I went from a number one baseball team. And during my college time, you know, my sophomore year, I'm a captain, you know? So it was like, this is one of the hardest workers people have ever seen. This is not the most talented player in the world, but he gets by because he's a smart player. He's a skilled player and he's a worker.
Yeah.
And, you know, my first year there at IUP with Coach Kanaski, who I think is the second most influential person to me other than my dad at basketball, you know, we were, I think, 16 and 12. Then we were 18 and 9. And by the time it was my junior year, we were 27 and 3, number one in the nation, made the Elite Eight. And then my senior year, like, we 29 and 1 through the regular season, number one in the nation, really had goals to win the national championship. We lost in the semifinals to Cal Riverside, and Southern Indiana, coached by Bruce Pearl, won it. But all of these experiences were geared towards, hey, I want to have the experience of understanding as a player. Okay, you love to play, but there was always the mindset with me that, okay, the purpose here is for me to challenge myself, to try to organize myself and be ready to coach when that opportunity comes. And Kirk Kanaski was, you know, really, really good to me. You know, he found some scholarship money for me before the end of my college career. You know, he allowed me to do a lot of things, strength and conditioning programs, design. And, you know, going into my senior year, he allowed me to kind of, I put together this whole document called Blueprint for a title, Blueprint for a National Championship. And that was like the mentality behind, you know, our team, our work ethic and all of these things. And, you know, I think all of these experiences really laid the foundation in terms of, okay, when I get my opportunity to coach, you know, this is how it's going to be. So without a doubt, there was a really focused, you know, attention to detail. Like, you know, when I'm done, I'm going to get right into coaching.
Yeah, you knew from, like you said, you knew when you were a kid what you wanted to do. So then, okay, so that's super interesting. So then the obvious question here is, tell me about your first coaching opportunity. Now, it doesn't have to be a head coach, just, okay, you're finished playing and you've always had that mindset, you're locked in. So now you jump to your first opportunity. What was it? And then
tell me one thing
I want to ask about that, though, is, was it what you thought it was going to be? So when you flipped into that first role, that first experience? Yeah.
Well, I felt like, so as my senior year ended at IUP, the late great coach and athletic director, Frank Signetti, was helping me with the strength and conditioning coach at Florida State. So I was going to go to Florida State as a strength and conditioning intern, GA. Okay. But that fell through. And basically I was like, okay, well, let me, I was looking at Kansas. I was looking at a couple different places that those opportunities just didn't pan out. And it's like, okay, I want to find some. So I ended up going back to Clarion University and working for Ron Ryder. And he was a really experienced coach. He coached as an assistant at Iowa and USC. And he was really, you know, good with the flex offense and things like this. And at the time it was everything I could ask for, because as a graduate assistant, I was the second assistant on staff.
Oh, wow.
Doing everything you can imagine.
Yeah.
You know, player development, scouting reports, video breakdown, you know, everything, class checks and academics. And so it was exactly what I hoped it would be. The first year we struggled, but my second year there, we did really well, made it to the conference championship. I had a lot of good experiences. And from there, IUP had an opening and they hired me back. So I got my master's degree at Clarion while I was there. And then I went back to IUP as an assistant for Gary Edwards, who came to IUP from Division I Charleston Southern. And we had a lot of really good teams there as well. So in my 3 years at IUP, more good runs. And it kind of peaked around 2000. We made the Elite Eight again. We won the East Region Championship with an unbelievable NCAA tournament run in Charleston, West Virginia. I think we were seeded seventh and just 3-0, just beat all these good teams, came out of nowhere. And then we ended up going back to Louisville. We lost in the Elite Eight to Kentucky Wesleyan. From there, I went to Pittsburgh State in Kansas. I worked for Gene Iba. So that's the nephew of Henry Iba. And I, you know, felt like, hey, this is going to be a great spot for me. Basically, we went 21-9 and had a really good year. But, you know, sometimes you get yourself into a situation where you just don't really fit with people. And this is kind of the scenario with Coach Iba. He was a lot older and kind of, I don't think, a very not really like energized or, you know, like he was kind of towards the end of his career. And I was basically a very, you know, full of energy, up and coming, you know, into it. And there were some things that happened throughout the year that kind of got us on opposite sides. And basically at the end of the year, we both sat down, we're like, okay, you know, everybody's going to go in a different direction. At that point, I was kind of like, okay, let me, you know, find other opportunities in college. Let's see what's going to happen. And, you know, for one of the things my dad challenged me to do was like build a network. And for 3 summers while I was at Clarion and IUP, I worked some summer basketball camps all over the USA. And this is partly how I got into Canada with Mark Walton in Cathedral High School. We can come back to that. But so I'm working all these camps, every place you can imagine: Duke, North Carolina, North Carolina State, Florida, Kentucky, New Mexico, Kansas. You know, I every place there was a you know, like a really good coach that I wanted to learn from, you know, I would kind of target these guys. And you know, you would have these chalk talks. And you so I really had these great experiences for these 3 summers. But what the byproduct was the network. I met so many great coaches and so many great people. So, you know, you make these contacts, you make these connections, and I'm still in touch with many of these people today. Well, one guy was a guy, Aaron Christian, and Aaron was a really good friend. He was from Portland, Oregon, and he was at Concordia College in Oregon working for Brad Barbarick. And while he was there, Brad had placed a player, had placed a coach in Chemnitz, Germany. We got a little guest right now. In Chemnitz, Germany. And while he was in Chemnitz, the coach was like, he got homesick and he wanted to come home. So when he went back to San Diego, they were offering Aaron this job. Well, Aaron also had the opportunity to go to, I think it was Portland State. Him and his wife are from Portland. They're like, we're going to Portland. Mike, would you be interested in going to Chemnitz to be the head coach? And I thought to myself, like, you know what? I'll go over there for a year. And after that, just come back and get into college again. And okay, we went. I went over. I signed. This was in 2001, third division in Germany. Thinking it's going to be a short term thing, and through, you know, a lot of hard work, we ended up winning our championship and moved Chemnitz up to the second league. I went back to Dodge City, Kansas, in the USBL. Worked for Cliff Levingston. That's a whole nother story with the Dodge City legend. From there, I went to England. I got hired by the, it was the London Leopards organization. After a year there, it crashed. So I'm again stuck. I went back to Germany, and this is kind of where I made a home in Ulm for 8 years. Coached 3 years in the second league, moved him up to the first league, coached 5 more years in the first league. During that time, I also was working as an assistant coach with the Czech Republic national team. After Ulm, my contract was not renewed in 2011, and my time in England, Chris Finch from the Minnesota Timberwolves was coaching Sheffield, and Nick Nurse was, you know, from Raptors and now Sixers, he was coaching Brighton. So I got to know those guys. Nick helped me get into the D League. When I left Ulm, basically he was getting me involved in the team he left from Iowa Energy. Kevin Young, who's now an assistant with the Suns, and myself were up for the job. My friend Jay Larinaga was helping me with the Canton Charge. And Nick was going to RGV, Rio Grande Valley. And he was like, hey, try to get these jobs. If you don't get it, come down here with me. So I tried for those other jobs. They didn't work out. And Nick, I went down with Nick to RGV. He really showed me a lot and helped me a lot understanding how the D-League worked. And then from that point, you know, after that year, I got hired by the Celtics to coach the Maine Red Claws. And I was basically there. The Celtics took over full control of the basketball operations in Maine. I was the first hire for the Celtics. And it was Doc Rivers' last year and Brad's first year. So when you think about the development of coaching, you know, my dad really challenged me early to develop a philosophy, to understand and how I wanted things. I went through the personal experience of playing and understanding that aspect. You know, you build a network of different people all over the United States, all over the world. And then, you know, I think being around and working with Nick, seeing Doc up close and seeing Brad up close, you have a feeling like I've seen the best work. I know what the best look like. Mm-hmm. And it's like developing your own philosophy and trying to continually get better in those areas. But you have that self-confidence, like, you know, I've seen the best in the game. So I understand what that level is like. And it's like trying to push yourself to get there all the time.
Yeah.
So after Maine, my second year in Maine, I got hired by the Polish national team to coach in Poland. And I really felt like my first year with Doc in Boston, I'm like, hey, you know, I'm really on track to get to the NBA. I feel great about where I'm at. Well, then, of course, Doc left the Celtics and went to the Clippers, and he took most of the staff with him. Myself and one or two other coaches stayed behind. I had a contract with the G League, and I'm like, okay, you know, I wasn't on that level where he was going to take me. So I'm like, okay, Brad's coming in. After the second year, they basically were like, hey, you know, we're not going to renew you. But I was fortunate enough to have the Poland opportunity and basically use that as motivation. Like, okay, I'm going to try to show everybody what I can do over here. When I went to Poland in 2014, they had really struggled in Eurobasket 2013. They had Maciek Lampe, Marcin Gortat, two NBA players, stars for Europe. And they had really high expectations, but they struggled. So I came in with instead of a star mentality, instead of just one player, we're going to build a team aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically we kind of rebuilt the whole thing. You know, over the 8 years, we went from 44th in the whole world. We rose to a ranking of 13th. So that's a huge, huge improvement. And then again, what people will probably remember me most for in Poland is the World Cup 2019 in China, where we made the second World Cup in Poland history. The first in 52 years, 1967 was the first one. And then in 2019 in China, we went on a great run and finished eighth. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of the pinnacle of it. While I was coaching in Poland, I also picked up the Hamburg Towers job and was there for 2 years. We won the second league in Germany and moved up to the Bundesliga. And then basically, you know, I just refocused on after COVID stopped and things changed. I just refocused on Poland. And then after the Olympic qualifying tournament in 2021, after a great 8-year run, Poland was like, okay, it's time for a new voice. We want to do something different. So basically they paid out the rest of my contract, and that's kind of how I got involved in the CEBL. Kyle Julius from Vancouver reached out. He was not able to coach his team, the Bandits, because of his team in Taiwan, the Formosa Dreamers at the time. And he's like, hey, would you like to do this? And I said, man, that CEBL looks like fun. It reminds me of old school minor league in the USA. And the reason that I value it so much is there are very few places in professional basketball now where you can put your system in and build your team and do things your way. Again, I'm old enough to remember the old school CBA, the old school USBL, United States Basketball League, where It was a head coach and a general manager. Sometimes it was the same guy, but the trick was being good basketball X's and O's, but also being able to know players to keep your roster really good as players leave, come, go, whatever. Nowadays in the G League, you know, you have NBA teams controlling everything. So when I'm coaching with the Celtics, I'm running Doc Rivers' offense. When I'm coaching with the Celtics, you know, I'm asking, hey, Brad, do you want me to run your stuff? What would you like me to run? So you're basically, you're not really having too much of an influence on the roster, and you're also running someone else's system.
Yeah.
And this is one of the things that I really value about the CEBL right now is the ability to be able to, in an old school manner, run things player personnel wise and system wise in your own way. So, but the whole Kyle Julius contact comes back to the cathedral. My first entry into Canada, Kurt Kanasky was supposed to do a summer camp for Mark Walton at Cathedral High School in Hamilton. My dad's from, you know, Youngstown, New York, where Fort Niagara is just north of Buffalo. So we would be in Hamilton, Toronto a lot when I was young. So Coach Kanasky was like, Mike, hey, I can't make it up there. I got this other conflict. Would you like to go? And I'm like, yeah. So I went up and did a clinic and spoke at Coach Walton's camp. And we stayed in touch. So as I went to, as I coached at IUP, I started to really recruit Cathedral, and Kyle was on those teams. We actually signed a player named Phil Martin, who was a really good 6'8" athletic wing forward. We signed him to IUP Division II, but then some other people came involved and he changed his decision and went to Hawaii. He had a fantastic career at Hawaii, went on to play professionally in Italy. He still lives in Hawaii, but you know, Mihai Raducanu, like, there were, you know, Matt Erdman, who ironically is a connection for Scott Morrison, who became an intern for us at Maine. And now Ryan Thompson, who's our assistant coach and assistant general manager in Winnipeg. So all of these guys, it goes back to Cathedral. So, you know, that was kind of a really important step for me to get to know all those people and how it's opened up some doors here in Canada for me.
That, you know, it's so interesting. Like the networking piece of it all is such a key thing. And, you know, you've mentioned some people, I had no idea who they were. Other people I know, like Scott Morrison and stuff and Erdman, you know, through college, like Lakehead and everything like that. The basketball world's quite small in the world. Like, you find out very much in the world, it's quite small. And if you know one or two people in a country or something like that, you just say enough names and they'll know those people. Very, very, pretty much one connection away from almost anybody in the network. You find that out when you start. Yeah, it's crazy. You find that when you start traveling and you get outside of, you know, in your case, it was the United States, but you're so close. So the big question I have here, though, is a lot of time in Germany. Do you speak any German?
Yes. So I went over there not speaking German, but been in three cities. So Chemnitz is the old East Germany, and that was 2001, 2002, they spoke German, Russian than English, not a lot of English. So I took some classes there, but it was more fun. I went there with our American player, Sly McIntosh, my guy. And basically, you know, we had a person who helped the team, Jens Kunze. And Jens basically was a teacher and he, you know, helped us start to learn. It, like I said, it was more fun. When I went to Ulm, I was in Ulm for 8 years and I got to know a guy named Reiner Falber and he got to be a friend and he was a teacher at the Sprachschule, the like language school, Berlitz. So maybe my second or third year, I just started, you know, once or twice a week for an hour or so going up and it was more, I'm going up to see my friend and we're just kind of hanging out and having fun. But I started to, you know, pick up more and more German. And the team helped me. Like after games, they would bring me to the middle of the court and give me the microphone. And I would try to say, speak German. I liked it because it was, I said I spoke Witzig Deutsch, like funny German, because I would say funny stuff. People would laugh, you know. And but it was like people appreciated the attempt. So then, you know, I met my wife, and her dad had played 8 years in Germany. They're originally from the Czech Republic, but she grew up in Germany. So we speak German. Her mom and dad, when I speak to them, it's all in German.
Really? Okay.
And our boys, both our boys were born. Luke was born in Tübingen and Nick was born in Hamburg. And, you know, like they're being raised with German. So,
you guys speak German in the house?
Yeah. They speak okay. German.
Very cool. Very cool.
And, you know, for me, that was, it just made life really comfortable in Germany. You know, like you mm-hmm. you can communicate, you can express yourself, you can understand.
Yep.
Now, I'm not one who's great with languages. So, okay. I was also 8 years in Poland.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Yeah.
To me, I did not make the same effort to try to learn Polish. But at the same time, I knew that that would be a really challenging task for me personally. Mm. Of course, the players made sure I knew all the bad words in Polish.
Of course, right? Of course.
That's
of course.
The first thing you learn.
Always.
But no, so, you know, the one thing, Darcy, that I'm really thankful for and that I could never have expected, I love basketball. I grew up wanting to be a coach, and I had the idea to be like my dad and coach in college. But now the game opens up all these doors to life experiences around the world, different cultures, different people. So the way basketball has helped me to broaden myself is something special and something that I'm very appreciative for. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have basically, like I like to say, friends for life in all of these different spots that I've coached, all of these different countries. And, you know, like I'm very thankful that it was basketball that kind of helped open these doors.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard this story so many times, obviously speaking with so many people. It's the experience that I have as well for myself. I mean, you can say this about many sports, you know, sports generally open up the world, but basketball is a, you know, we're very biased here, but basketball is a very special sport. And I said this before, but I think there's a reason why. I know it was someone's marketing campaign, but the ball is life thing. I mean, it worked for a reason. You know what I mean? Like it's truly can be a lifestyle. I got to ask you this question though. So you've coached obviously, you know, all over the world. I've heard some crazy stories from people who have played overseas of fans or just crazy things that have happened. Can you just tell me, you know, some of the more interesting or, you know, crazy, for lack of a better term, stories with regards to things that have taken place and you know, it doesn't even have to be in Europe, because I know you've done minor league stuff, just generally speaking, basketball world, but maybe something that North Americans would be surprised to hear about a different cultural element of the game or anything like that.
I have so many, but I just got to try to pick the ones that are coming to mind right now.
Yeah.
Again, let's go back to my first year in Chemnitz. We used to have morning shoot around, and you know, guys would be at these baskets and we would finish with free throws, and I would let these guys, we had a rule. You could do anything to try to distract your teammate. You could do anything, but you can't touch him. Yeah. Right. You can't touch him. You can't disrupt his shooting motion and you can't touch him. Yeah. So these guys would be doing crazy stuff to each other, firing balls at each other, crawling between their legs, doing dances, you know, all this stuff. So, you know, we were 7-4 at Christmas, and we basically won 11 straight games. And on this 11-game win streak, we went to Bayern Munich, and we were playing Bayern Munich. This was before they became this big European power basketball club. This was just a German small team at the time. So we're playing Bayern Munich, and we have to win this game. Like, this is a must win. So this guy I told you about, Sly McIntosh, I coached him at IUP. I had him in Dodge City. I had him in Chemnitz. I had him in London. This was one of my close friends, and like I coached him a long time. So he's at the free throw line late in the game. Some crazy fan runs out of the bleachers and gets on the baseline. There's no security in these games.
Yeah, of course.
So Sly is at the free throw line going through his routine, and here comes this fan on the baseline, jumping around, dancing, lifting up his shirt, doing all this crazy stuff. Sly's just like, okay, I see this every Tuesday, Thursday in the morning, shooting around, boom, 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 swish, swish, we win. So that would be one I can remember. Another one, we were in Ulm playing in the second league, and we went to a small town. I can't remember the name of the town right now, but it was in Bavaria, close to Old East Germany. I'll try to think of it as we talk, but we got to this old gym and there was a soccer tournament, indoor soccer tournament. This is the middle of winter, right? So there's snow everywhere. You know, it's a regular day, long bus ride to get there. And we open up the door and it's like, okay, you got to wait to warm up because winter, we open up the door. There's this big soccer tournament. You guys got to wait to warm up. Okay, we wait. We're sitting on the bleachers. Tournament ends. Fans clear out. Guys are in the locker room getting changed. Some worker comes out with a can of Coke, a bottle of Coke, and a broomstick. And this is one of those fake floors. It's not a wood floor. It's one of those,
like those rubber floors.
This guy, instead of drinking the Coke, starts pouring it in front of him as he's walking with the broom, right? So he's pouring the Coke on the floor. He's wiping it up with the broom. And now the floor's sticky again. Like this was the idea of, all right, let's take care of the floor and get ready for the basketball game. Are you kidding me? So many little stories that pop into your mind. Just some funny situations and lots of great memories. You know what I mean? Whether it's, G League or overseas, so many things, but it really is true. You don't remember how many points you scored or whatever you remember the people that you do it with. And those are the things that I'm most happy about and thankful for is to still be in contact and have connection with so many great players and great people throughout the world.
Yeah. 100%. 100%. So, I mean, you kind of brought us up in the story all the way up to, where we're at now, more or less. So obviously 2022 was a big year. We kind of opened the conversation with that, with the Sea Bears and the CBL. So, I'll just ask this, what attracted you to the opportunity when you were approached for this opportunity? Off air, we kind of said, you heard a lot of things about Winnipeg and, Winnipeggers will be the first people to say some of those things. So in a lot of cases, it's one of those love-hate relationships, especially this time of the year. Yeah. But what attracted you to the opportunity?
Well, again, when I was in Fraser Valley, Dylan and Kyle were very good to me. They supported me. They helped me. And we had a good year. It was the most wins the team had ever had, 12 in their existence. Mm-hmm. So I feel like, hey, we had a great run. But again, I knew when Kyle was like, hey, Mike, will you come coach this team? I knew at some point he was going to come back because it was a schedule conflict. His team, there was some COVID in the league. His team, was playing in the playoffs, all these things. I knew at some point he'd be like, yeah, I'm going to try to come back and coach. Well, after the season, he's like, hey, I want to come back. We love what you did. You're more than welcome to stay as an assistant. And I'm saying with Kyle and Dylan, just honestly, like, well, I really appreciate that. But I'd love to see what other head coaching opportunities are out there. And Dylan, as soon as he heard that, picked up the phone and called some of his other general manager and president connections in the league. And there was some interest. I had great conversations with Joel in Montreal. So that was a very interesting place. I had good conversations with Reed at the time in Edmonton. Mm-hmm. And then, I talked with some different people and they're like, you need to look into Winnipeg. So I started to talk with Jason and the people in Winnipeg. And as the pictures became clear of what the offers would be in each place, I kind of asked Mike Morreale. I said, Mike, here's my situation. What do you think? And he's like, well, I think Winnipeg would be a great fit for you. Mm-hmm. And as we talked about all these different opportunities and circumstances, it just kind of became crystal clear. Like Winnipeg is the best place for me moving forward. So again, I appreciate everything the guys in Vancouver did, the conversations with Joel, the people in Edmonton, all these things, but even the people in Hamilton, Brampton, I was the assistant or associate head coach with the Honey Badgers in the BCLAs last winter. Had a really great experience and loved the people there. But it was like, man, Winnipeg is, I really believe this is going to be something great. And this is a great fit for me. So that's kind of how that all came about. And, you know, I'm really thankful the way it's, you know, developed till now.
Yeah. Yeah. So tell me about the first game. And we talked a little bit when we opened up the conversation, you know, just how supportive the community was and how great it's been. And, you know, just the top notch entertainment, just the product on the floor. Tell me what you remember about the first game.
Well, the first game, you know, obviously there was so much anticipation. For me, it kind of brought everything to life. It, you know, we built with the idea of, hey, let's put this team together. It can be like this. We can organize it like this. It can develop like this. But it was all hypothetical. It was all a vision. It was all a plan. And then that first game made it a reality. It brought it to life. You know, I was in Fraser Valley when their, you know, Scarborough came out, and it was the league record crowd of 4,400, whatever, you know, and that was a great crowd, a great environment. But, you know, we're at 7,000 opening night, you know, so for me, you know, the whole venue was super professional. The fan experience was really well done. And then again, I have the personal game against Vancouver. So there was a lot of things going on for me. I don't think you could write a better ending than Chad Posthumus getting the game winning basket in target score time. You know, I want to say Chad did so many things to help our organization from December until training camp. And then, you know, as a player helped our team, but I don't think people understand all the little things that he did to help our team. Connections, you know, recruiting. He was just such an important figure for us to rely on in terms of establishing ourselves in Winnipeg. And then I think the way basketball is, fate kind of paid him back a little bit with a wonderful moment right there. You know, and as someone who genuinely likes Chad and, you know, has a warm spot in my heart for him, I mean, I was so happy to see him get that offensive rebound, get the game-winning basket, and start just
back
half court. You know, so I think it was a wonderful opening. And again, it brought the whole thing to life. And the one thing, Darcy, when I was trying to recruit players last year to come to Winnipeg, they're like, I'm like, yeah, that sounds nice. But I mean, what is it going to be really? What? Well, here it is. It came to life, and then we built on it throughout the summer. So I know now players will be looking at Winnipeg and say, man, that's a good place to play.
Yeah, I can imagine, right? I mean, they step in the arena again. There's just no, I'm not being disparaging to any of the other arenas. It's just that the standard has been elevated, simply put. Like, it's just you, it's another level.
And now you have Edmonton trying to get into Rogers Center. You have Calgary trying to get into the Saddle Dome. And I think this is something that we have to give David Asper credit for. And all of his experience with the Blue Bombers and sports, you know, management and things like this, he helped with that vision to raise the league because of what we did in our market. And now there's certain owners that want to go with them.
Yeah.
And I think to me, that's really a healthy thing for the league. It's going to challenge people. And I think that it can help the CEBL get to that next level.
100%. And you know, me being a basketball diehard, that's, it's amazing to have Winnipeg. Cause like I was traveling around the country a little bit and around the time. And, you know, other people in the other communities were, oh, hey, how about Winnipeg? Hey, it's, you know, that's crazy what you guys are doing, you know, talking to other franchises and people in there. I think it's just a great expression. Like, you probably know a little bit about the CFL and everything like that. It's, I can't say enough, and I've said this before, the fact that the CBL somehow managed to make it through the pandemic and during the pandemic, I should say, is a true sign of them doing everything the right way. And again, and like you said, David, and now the Sea Bears are kind of the expression of that, taking it to the next level and elevating it. It's just been, it's just really exciting. On that same note, I'm curious what your thoughts are of the CBL generally, because they've managed to do things differently. And one of the ways, you mentioned it, is by that target score. What are your thoughts on that, man? Being, you know, it's some people hate it. Like, I've heard people say terrible things, and I say every game to me seems great. So, you know, what are your thoughts?
Well, the first thing is, you know, I've been in a lot of different leagues around the world, and there's little unique points or rules or styles, you know, in every different country. And the CEBL has chosen the target score. So the first thing is accept the rules and the situation for what it is and work to make it the best.
Yes.
Right? So yes. It doesn't do any good to be like, oh, I hate this, or I don't like this, or this doesn't make sense. Take the personal opinions out of it. And this is what we're dealing with. These are the rules and the structure we play in. Now, why will you hear coaches say that? You hear coaches say that because coaches have less control at that time. Now, you watch the NBA games, and here's a coach calling a timeout. He's drawing up a set play. Then there's a foul. And then, oh, there's an offensive a rebound from the free throw. They call a timeout and advance the ball. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's like the last 2 minutes of an NBA game take like 15, 20 minutes. You know what I mean? So, okay, I understand the whole mindset, but what you give up from a coaching standpoint, you give up the ability to really impact and control the game by making sure you get the shot that you want, drawing up that set play, advancing the ball, controlling these different aspects. So coaches give up control. The second thing that can happen or may not happen, when you go into target score time with 4 minutes to go in the game, the main thing, you could theoretically score on three straight possessions, hit three threes, and it's done. Mm-hmm. Now, 4 minutes and three possessions, you're giving up a lot of regular game time. Mm-hmm. So the thought of you're going from playing a certain way through 36 minutes of the game, and then the last 4 minutes change. What realistically happens, though, is players change their mindset. They change the way they play. Mm-hmm. It's like, I've been doing certain things for 36 minutes to be successful, and now it's target score time. I want to make the big shot. I want to make the hero shot.
Yeah.
So this is the key mentally with your team. Coaches, you give up the control, build your team, help your players to know how to play together, and trust your players, right? Let them figure out how they're going to win the game and play smart together, okay? Mm-hmm. The main thing is the shot selection and the type of shots that you're creating as a team. You should not change the way you play. You should focus more on execution and precision.
Mm-hmm. For sure. Yeah, no, that's interesting note about the target score, and you see that take place. Like the mentality shift, you can see it, like literally see it take place on the floor. And I guess, like you said, there's a little bit of control that's given up, but you know, a lot of that coaching comes into play, and the coaching that you do, not during the game, building that connection with the community, with their players, building connection with the team, having an understanding of like how we're going to approach these, you know, these last parts of the game is super important. So on that note, speaking of your actual coaching style, I don't know if you can tell us a little bit about that. You know, I read somewhere in doing my research here that you're a, you know, relationship based, but just tell me, you know, when you, well, let's focus on this team. When you had the first practice, the first interactions with your players, what are the things, your values that you really focus on when you're starting to build a team and make these connections with the players?
Yeah, there's a couple different aspects here. The first thing is, I say you can describe my coaching style as fun with discipline.
Okay.
And basically, the fun with discipline is a continuum, and it's about the coach reading the team. Again, I believe we're all at our best when we're enjoying ourselves and enjoying the people we're with and having fun and enjoying the process of basketball. So I want people to enjoy coming to the gym, to have fun as much as possible. Now, it's not always perfect. You know, you always have a conflict here or some personality here, right? Those are things you have to work out. But to me, you know, if you look at fun on one side and discipline on the other side, we as people will have a tendency to relax and have a little bit too much fun. So this is where maturity comes in for players. Can you have fun and still be mature and focus and get your work done and get your job done? Sometimes if you're not doing it, that's where the coach has to come in and bring you back with a little bit more discipline. And on the other side, sometimes there's too much stress. There's too much, you know, emotion or whatever it could be. At that point, that's where you have to interject the fun. So for me, it's reading the team and fun with discipline. And I think bringing that together is the skill for my coaching style. Now, when you talk about relationship-based is, all right, you know, every player, every coach, everyone brings something special to that team chemistry. And I want our team to value everyone. So you can be a star player like Teddy, or you can be a U-Sport player like Tyler Sagal. And we are trying to find ways for you to help the team, to improve your situation, to grow your role. But the big thing for me, if I'm going to be able to coach players through the full spectrum of emotion, then there's got to be a relationship there. That trust to me is built on a daily basis, where you build the trust with people and then you can kind of coach them as needed. You find out what buttons are the right buttons to push for each person, and you try to put them in a position to maximize themselves. So to me, the structure of the team, how the individuals fit in, a lot of that has to do with building the relationships and really valuing and trying to maximize every person's situation within the team. Now, we're not perfect. There's always going to be times where, you know, somebody's dissatisfied or some situation doesn't go great. It's just about, you know, taking ownership and saying, hey, we're doing the very best we can. And we're going to try to do you right. We're going to do everybody as best we can to try to do people right throughout the course of the season. So, you know, over my years in terms of building a team, you know, I have this whole structure, but a lot of the things, we basically break it down into three. We talk about concepts of be the best version of yourself. And those would be the, you know, the things that don't take talent. Then we talk about be the best team. And these are the things that, you know, that we talk about within that part are things like playing positive, emotional discipline. We have a list of things we talk about. And then the third part is be the best when it matters the most. So again, if you have everyone trying to be the best version of themselves and everyone trying to be the best team together, then that puts you in a position where you really have a chance, you know, in those season deciding games and season situated, be the best when it matters the most. So these are some of the things that we talk about with our team. And again, you know, I think the guys can appreciate the structure. Myself, our coaches, I think we're very good communicators. And, you know, I think that they, the players know, like, hey, these guys, they really care about us, and they may not always agree with the things we're trying to get done. But we're trying to make the right decisions, you know, as best we can for the team, you know, over and over again.
Yeah. 100%. So, I mean, and I'm curious what your thoughts are on this, because, you know, we're talking about specifically your philosophy with the players, with the team. You mentioned a big part of your whole journey was doing coaches, camps and clinics and things of that nature, kind of working within the community. And we talked again early in the conversation about how, you know, Winnipeg has just come out and supported. Now, I know in speaking with, you know, Jason and other people at the Sea Bears and Adam with Basketball Manitoba, that, you know, the Sea Bears are really keen to get even more involved in the community and doing community outreach and things of that nature. So, you know, why is that so important to you? And then again, the big question is do you feel that that actually contributes to the success of the team?
Well, the first thing, you know, one of our goals when we first started talking about, okay, what do we want the Winnipeg Sea Bears to be? We valued the connection to the Winnipeg community. Mm-hmm. We valued the opportunity for boys and girls of all ages to play basketball. I think people are giving to us a lot. They're coming to support the team. They're cheering for the players. They're you know, bringing their energy. What are we doing to give back? Mm-hmm. You know, it's got to be a two-way street.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, for us as coaches or players, you know, a great way to express your appreciation and thankfulness is being involved with these, you know, Sea Bear Summer Series or the Winter Series. I think that all of these things are ways to build connection and build relationships. So for me, I think that's the first part of it. It is a very important part. It's an important piece to help people have fun with basketball and build the personal relationship. Again, it's consistent with the relationship-based coaching. You go into the city, you go into the town, and you build connection with people. Hey, you know what? I brought my son or daughter to this Sea Bear Summer Series. I like the coach. I mm-hmm. like the players. Let's go see them play.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a healthy way to build that connection and develop it. The second part, does it help the team? I really believe it does. Because in our Sea Bear Summer Series, for example, you know, we had different age groups on different days. So there were a lot of kids, boys and girls, that came through those gyms and got firsthand. They got a chance to see how big Chad Posthumus was. They got mm-hmm. a chance to shake Teddy Allen's hand. They got a chance to see all of the Sea Bears players in person. And then when they go sit at the Canada Life Center, mm-hmm. oh man, this was the guy that was doing rebounding drills with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay? yeah.
So I think that's great. But for what it does for the players, they have the feeling that they are actively giving back to younger generation, helping younger kids. And I know that we all have had people that have helped us along the way. So it's just mm-hmm. nice to continue that tradition and pass it on. So mm-hmm. I think it's a good use of their energy. It's a good use of their time. And in general, I just think it's a very important piece of building the connection with the community and giving the players an avenue to give back to the, mm-hmm. to the city.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's interesting when you're talking about that, I was making that personal connection with, you know, imagining yourself as a player in the city, walking to the arena, having your name called, seeing the fans cheer for you. But then now you're going out there in the community, meeting those people, like you said, making connections with somebody. And then when it comes to thinking about, well, you know, where am I going to play next year? You know, where do I want to play? And making those connections not only makes you feel accepted, but it makes that place that you're playing in a community that you feel welcomed in, because you're not only just, it's not that they're just cheering for you. Hey, they're supposed to cheer for you when you do well, but now they're actually talking to you and you're having that it's a two-way connection, right? In the other case, it's kind of a one-way connection. And this builds that, it's a very human element to the whole experience.
And Darcy, that happened on a very high level this summer in Winnipeg. Mm. You know, we would see our guys on the streets. We would see our guys. We took them to a Gold Eye game. We took them to the Bombers game. And people were really happy to meet them, happy to see them. You know, our experience of, you know, being downtown, walking here, walking there, very, very positive. And again, the relationship and the energy the fans poured into caring for our players.
Mm-hmm.
To me, I think it's something special that I mean, you can have it in other cities, but mm-hmm. I just think it was on a really elite level here in Winnipeg for last summer.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, like, the, you know, it's interesting. So my mom's a big Blue Bombers fan, and she was telling me, I don't know, she was explaining how the league is reformatted. So they're playing everybody again and they made some changes, and she was all excited. You know, she saw a player while she was shopping and she was all excited. She doesn't really like basketball, even though she watched me play my entire career. But that said, what, you know, where I'm going with this is that's kind of what I see taking place with the Sea Bears. It's only been one season, right? The league's only been around for a handful of years. See, the CFL has been around for like 7 years or something like that. And so it is really just everything you're explaining here and telling us about the way that the community is accepted. You not only just like showing up to the games and cheering, but then when you're out, just out and about, just doing things, it's a huge indication of, you know, where the city is and what the future is going to be bringing with regards to, you know, obviously the CBL as a whole, them continue to grow and do what they do. But here locally in Winnipeg, again, like, you know, I asked you how you felt when the first game happened. For me, just being a diehard here, I went back and imagined like, man, if I was a kid growing up in this time, it would have been amazing. Like, you know, your perspective and just that joy that you have, you know? And so this whole experience with connecting to the community, I know that there's kids that have experienced extreme joy. And again, that have started playing basketball or have said, I'm going to play basketball, or they're picking basketball over other sports just simply because of the great work that has been done by you, the front office. And obviously we talked about, you know, David Asper's, his vision, and everyone else who supported the franchise and players, everything. And so looking forward into next year and future years, you know, when it comes to, you know, off the court, on the court, what are some of the things that you're looking forward to this coming year and into the future?
Well, I think that last year there was a lot of possibilities, or let's see how this may be this way, as I said. Mm. And there were a lot of unknowns.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And this year there's a clear picture. There's experience. There's like, hey, this worked, or let's get better at this.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that we all on the floor, off the floor, in the city, we have, let's say, a better idea of, all right, this is what's realistic. And this is some of the things we can achieve. We can do this better. We need to continue or build on this. So I feel like the CBEAR Summer Series was great. I think that, you know, my early discussions with Jason, there are some other really fun and positive things. I don't want to get into, but I think that there are some creative new ideas that are going to put really positive perspective on the Sea Bears, and mm-hmm. people will say, hey, this is a really good thing. You know, obviously in terms of building the team, it's about, you know, continuing to compete and grow the organization so that we put ourselves in a position to win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't happen overnight. But we significantly helped ourselves by, you know, starting in a great place. So mm-hmm. now it's like, don't just be comfortable and rest. No, try to get better, work to mm-hmm. get better. What can mm-hmm. what areas can we improve on the floor, and, you know, work as hard as we can together to see that improvement.
Mm-hmm.
And then off the floor, finding these different ways that can really grow the connection and really, you know, help people understand that the Sea Bears are a family style organization that are great for people from all backgrounds around the city, really bring Winnipeg together. Mm-hmm. And just continuing to show like, hey, this is what the Sea Bears are. This is who they are. Mm-hmm. It's genuine. It's real. There's good people, and it's a really great thing for Winnipeg, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I think Winnipeg itself is a great sports town. You have the big leagues with the NHL. Mm-hmm. They understand what the highest level is like with the NHL, especially hockey in Canada. Like that's, mm-hmm. that's it. And then, you know, in terms of the Blue Bombers, what the Blue Bombers tradition has established, we have some great role model organizations right there.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
what we're trying to do is establish our identity, fit into the environment in a positive way. And I think that people can see, like, you know, there's a really positive place for the Sea Bears in Winnipeg and,
yeah,
and the CEBL.
100%. 100%. The thing that came to mind when you were saying all that was you want the Sea Bears to be a true expression of what Winnipeg is. I think that's kind of the vision. It's like, you know, if we're going to paint the what is Winnipeg right now? Well, we want the Sea Bears to be exactly that, an expression of that. And that's kind of what came to mind when you said that. So question here, this is kind of an aside to what we're talking about right now, but because we talked about players building the team, do you have any contact with players that you know are coming back in next year? And do you remain in contact with them? And how do you coach them? I know they're playing elsewhere and things like that. How do you ensure or at least help support them so that they can be in a good position and improve even though they're away from the team?
Well, that's a great question. And the main thing is the nature of the CEBL is that there will be turnover. The CEBL is a unique league because of the timing. Some players will have conflict with finishing their seasons. Some players will want to rest. Some players will have national teams. So it's a unique player. In the summer, we could be doing a lot of things. We could be at the beach. We could be spending family time. You could be doing a lot of things. But the players and coaches that commit the time and make the commitment to come to the CEBL, it's a specific person that loves it, that wants it, and is using it to improve themselves. So there will be turnover. We want to have as much continuity as we possibly can that makes sense. But I want you to recognize, like last year, my philosophy is that we want to have consistency with our roster. We made one roster move all summer, and that was taking Shane Osiande off the protected list or emergency list because he was in Qatar and his season went long, and we wanted to keep his rights, so we kept him. When he joined us, we activated him. That was our one move. We didn't cut players. We didn't release guys. We didn't add new guys. My point was build a team up in training camp and keep guys together for 20 games, growing the team together. Now, if that's going to be your philosophy, this is the time to try to improve the roster to a point where you're feel like, hey, our team is better. We're in a place where we can be a real championship contender. So the challenge now is to track the players, evaluate, where are areas we can get better, and try to build that team that connects and fits well together like we did last summer that we can commit to for 20 games. Now, we were fortunate there were not many, there was no serious injuries, and then a couple of players missed games here or there, but there was no need for injury replacements and things like this. So we will continue to track all the guys, whether they're playing U Sport like Simon or Tyler, whether they're playing in Europe, overseas. And we'll evaluate our players, and then we'll evaluate some players throughout the CEBL that we like, and try to put together the best roster we can. Now, I also want to say, like, for example, Teddy Allen, who was a fan favorite and was so important to our success this year, he went through a difficult time after the MVP season. He had high expectations. His agents originally were aiming for an Exhibit 10 two-way contract. When those didn't work out, it was kind of mismanaged a little bit. So Teddy changed his agents. He's landed now in Leicester, England. He had some situations pop up here and there, but he's now getting ready to play tonight, his first game for the Riders. So these are the things that we can do to help our players, to try to, hey, Teddy doesn't have a job. His agents are kind of, he's having a struggle with them. Let me call some friends. Let me try to open up some doors, try to help players. Because at the end of the day, we want a player like Teddy back. And the CEBL as it is now is not something you can just, oh, I'm going to play in the CEBL and do nothing the rest of the year. No, for your career, you've got to play. And for us to get you when you're really at your best, we want you to be sharp and improving and developing and feeling good. You need to play. So, Chad, for example, another guy is playing 3-on-3, and I think that's great for him. He's turned down a couple situations in like Mexico, for example. Maybe he'll end up signing one if he likes. But again, the relationship aspect, you're taking care and taking interest in each of these guys. And if it's needed, you're doing what you can to try to help push them into a better place and opportunity to help us when they come back in the spring.
Yeah, 100%. No, I appreciate that. That just came up to me later. I'm like, I got to ask this question because, like, again, some people don't know this, everything you said about the CBL, but anyone who knows basketball knows that this is a spring summer league, and there are those challenges with players and things of that nature. So just looking forward into the future of the CBL, do you see a future for this league that it could exist in a more traditional sense? Or do you think that this is kind of the way that it'll be, you know, for at least the, you know, the short term?
I think for short term, it needs to stay in the spring, the summer. Mm-hmm. I think you could maybe extend it or shift the season a little bit. But what I like about it is the uniqueness. The only other real basketball going on in that time frame, NBA Summer League, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. a league in Puerto Rico, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, these are the leagues that I think at that time have carved out a niche. And for us, it's just continuing to build on it and grow on it. I think the league has to grow and develop. And if they ever decide to make a change to a traditional season, it's got to be several steps away from here where, you know, you're able to really pay, you know, the 10-month salaries of players or things like this, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think those are questions for the future. But for right now, we've got a great thing going. Mm-hmm. It's unique. It's fun. And again, you can see that it's really moving in the right direction in places like Winnipeg and Calgary and some of these other places. I think the Western Division teams are really doing great. Mm-hmm. And then I think that hopefully some of these Eastern spots can pick themselves up as well.
Yeah.
You know, Scarborough, Montreal, Ottawa, mm-hmm. some of these places doing really well. You hope that Brampton can really establish itself this year. Mm-hmm. And I should throw Niagara in there. Niagara's also doing a very good job. So it's not fair to say all the Western teams are doing great. Eastern teams are not. That's not correct.
No.
To be specific, you hope some of the teams that need a little boost can find it over the next few months.
Well, I'm just curiosity wise, I'm like, what's the next franchise going to be and when's that going to be? I'm pretty close with some people in Victoria, who've thrown that around. I've been involved in the Olympic qualifying tournaments that they hosted out there and some of the group there. And I know that would be, in my opinion, the last 3 years I've been there, there'd be a really nice market for the CBL. Got the right size arena and stuff like that. But just curiosity wise, I'm very curious to see what the league's next moves are with regards to expansion and where those franchises pop up. Because in Canada, as you know, there's only so many places, right? It's only a few other places left, really, if we're being honest here.
I know there's a lot of talk about Quebec City because of the arena. They had the Quebec City Clash, which everybody was really happy and positive about. Mm-hmm. Victoria, I've heard many good things about as well. Josh Reddy on our staff is, mm-hmm. He was at UVic for a while coaching, and he said many, many good things about Victoria and the potential there. You know, there's always the talk about Halifax because Halifax mm-hmm. has, such good basketball tradition and things like this. But, I want to say, okay, when I was in Vancouver, we played out in Newfoundland, and Newfoundland obviously did not last. The problem or challenge with the Maritime provinces is that some of these other Canadian leagues that were not quality or not up to standard. We have to help people understand that we are different from them.
Yes.
And, this is a really quality league. It's connected with Canada basketball. It's professional. Mm-hmm. There's no unpaid bills and mm-hmm. outstanding bills that are left within cities and things. And the whole professionalism, the whole standard of the league is different. And I think that's a little hurdle to overcome in some of the Maritime provinces.
Yeah.
Those leagues, I like to say that old school USA minor league basketball, particularly in the ABA, not the classic ABA 1970s, the recent ABA in the early 2000s, there were some shysters. There were some guys that were crooks. And from that standpoint, you can see some of that stuff in those Maritime provinces.
Yep. For sure. I could see that being a challenge, but nonetheless, and we're going to wrap up right away. One thing I will say about this topic, leave it at that is, after reflection, you'd have to pay the players a lot to come to Canada in the winter. So Just from that standpoint alone, keeping it summer. Hey, Canada is a great place to be in the
And I
summer.
mean, you
It's
think about the
great.
difference of Winnipeg in the
Yeah.
summer to the winter. How about
Oh man.
Montreal, Ottawa,
All the cities.
Edmonton,
Yeah.
Calgary?
Everywhere.
You know what I
Everywhere.
mean?
Yep. Even
So
Vancouver is just rainy. So like it doesn't matter where you go. It's, so summer spring's great.
it's the right time to present the country in that
Correct.
frame. It has the attention. I can't tell you how many of my coaching friends in Europe are so positive about the CEBL. You look at the CEBL players in Poland and Germany this year, right? These guys are watching. Oh, Mike, how's your team? Who do you like on your
Yeah,
team? Who's
yeah,
good? Tell me
yeah,
about this player in the league.
yeah.
And so many of these guys have gone on to play, sign contracts with German teams, Poland teams,
Yeah.
and they're playing well. So the CEBL is looked on very, very positively in the international basketball circle. And I think, again, it's because of the time frame, it's because of the standard and professionalism of the league. And as you know, people will talk about Canada basketball doing great at the World Cup. That's fantastic. You talk about all the NBA players that are coming from Canada now. Oh, there's a new wave of Canada basketball. But the CEBL is helping that as well
Yes.
because this is preparing players to go play overseas. There's more Canadians playing overseas than I don't know when. Like
Yeah.
basketball in general is really moving in a great direction. And it's not, okay, Winnipeg is a great sign, a great piece to it, really positive. But overall, the big perspective, it's a great time for Canada
Oh
basketball for
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, we'll come to the end here. I always like to finish with some advice. And we have a lot of coaches that listen to this podcast, players as well, but plenty of coaches, various levels. So when it comes to offering a bit of advice, I mean, we kind of went through your whole journey. So, there's lots of advice to take from there, networking and things of that nature. But imagine you're in front, you're at a coach's clinic, and you're now presenting to these coaches, and they're all sitting there. You want to leave them with something that can actually help them. It's they're going to walk away with this because you say so much stuff, right? We only walk away with so much, right? And so you want to tell them something that's going to be lasting and kind of ingrained in their mind. What advice would you give them? What would you say to them?
Be yourself, develop yourself, be who you are, and find out what your philosophy is and how you think the game should be played. And that should be the foundation, the baseline of, all the systems and everything you do. Always work to get better, try to improve your systems, your details all the time. I think the big thing is be open. A lot of coaches are, aren't open to other coaches or other people. I think that at the end of the day, we should remember that basketball is basketball. It's not the only thing in the world that, we should share and we should talk and coaches should cooperate. Because, like for example, the number one sport in Canada is hockey, right? Basketball is still a minority sport, and we have to have responsibility to work together to grow the game. And then the last part for me is balance coaching and family. And for me at this stage of my career, this is one of the things I love so much about the CEBL is the season I can go coach at a high level and bring that intensity, but then also too I can really be a presence for family and people that are important in my life. So I think these are the things that I would really focus on and talk about. And, I'm just thankful for the chance to share some of these things with you guys, with Adam, and, asking me to come on. And again, I really want to make a positive impact on the basketball community in Winnipeg. People will remember for the great season we had last year, but we want to keep working to get better. And I want to help players and coaches from the city as much as possible.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, it's a great way to finish, Coach. Appreciate you taking the time and looking forward to the future.
Thank you, Darcy. I
All right.
appreciate you taking the time.
Absolutely. No, it was my pleasure. My pleasure. I love doing this. So whenever I get people jumping on and just telling, sharing stories, I just get to sit back and listen. So I
Nick,
appreciate you taking the time.
can you say goodbye to Darcy? You don't want to.
Yeah, for those who are just listening and not watching, yeah. Mike, his son has been popping in and out, so maybe we've got edited out, but he's on the podcast right now. So we appreciate you taking the time, Coach.
Thank you, Darcy. Okay. Have a great right. day. Yep. Enjoy Take your care. Time. Happy holidays in Winnipeg.
Yes, happy holidays. Take care.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. Please like, subscribe, follow, and share this series, and reach out to us with your comments on the show. Thanks again for joining us.